The past must be examined closely, I believe, before we can leave it there.
From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID Race and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from the Pacifica Network and radio affiliates, focused on COVID-19 and the ways in which this pandemic touches our lives. I'm your host, Akua Holt.
Spent 9 days in the intensive care unit at United Memorial Medical Center here in Houston, as a result of COVID-19.
In today's edition of COVID Race and Democracy, we hear from Jeffrey Boney, associate editor of the Forward Times newspaper in Houston, Texas.
And of course, everybody was forcibly removed by our own military
with their big guns and their tanks.
Eagle Woman, aka Candy White, reporting from Montana about the recent Supreme Court ruling excluding the controversial Keystone XL expansion, a major loss for Mr. Trump.
When you're with a woman in labor and she's giving birth.
We are all wearing masks except for the woman in labor.
And certified nurse midwife Pat Jones talks about the challenges of COVID-19 and pregnancy. But first, the news with Jacob Wentz.
These are the headlines for Pacifica's COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm Jacob Wentz. The U.S. set another daily record for new coronavirus cases, surpassing 59,000 infections. It marks the fifth national record set in 9 days. The previous record, 56,567 infections, was reported last Friday. The virus is resurging in the West and the South, and 24 states have reported more cases over the past week than in any other 7-day stretch of the pandemic. The city of Tulsa, Oklahoma, is experiencing a surge in coronavirus cases a little over 2 weeks after President Donald Trump held a campaign rally in an indoor arena there. According to the Tulsa Fire Department, approximately 6,200 people attended the rally. Tulsa Mayor G.T. Bynum said the rally, along with weddings, religious events, and other large-scale gatherings, informed an executive order requiring events happening on or after July 16th with more than 500 people in attendance to submit a COVID-19 safety plan to the Tulsa Health Department for approval. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis echoed Trump's demand to fully reopen schools this fall.
I'm confident if you can do Home Depot, if you can do Walmart, if you can do these things, we absolutely can do the schools. I want our kids to be able to minimize this education gap that I think has developed.
This statement came as Florida crossed the 4,000 death threshold for the pandemic and logged a new record for 120 deaths in a 24-hour period. The same day, Dr. Anthony Fauci commented on the timing of Florida's reopening.
Certainly Florida, I know, I think jumped over a couple of checkpoints.
Currently, Florida averages 9,255 new cases each day, making it one of the most affected states in the country. Florida's Department of Education told school districts to submit reopening plans by the end of the month unless they were following a traditional 180-day school calendar. The agency said state funding to districts will be contingent on getting reopening plans approved. Ron Mayer, a Tallahassee attorney who has represented the state's teachers' union, accused the administration of overreach and said the order wasn't supported by the governor's emergency powers nor the Florida Constitution. Seattle City Council passed a new tax on big businesses to fund local economic relief and core services during the coronavirus crisis. The Jumpstart Seattle plan, proposed last month by Councilmember Teresa Mosqueda, targets corporations with payrolls of $7 million or more and employees with salaries above $150,000. These corporations would pay a tax rate that ranges from 0.7% to 2.4%. The 2.4% rate, which will affect Seattle-based Amazon, will apply to salaries of at least $400,000 at companies with at least $1 billion in annual payroll. The tax expects to raise more than $200 million per year for housing, local business assistance, and community development in the long term. In Brazil, a mother is mourning after finding her son critically injured on the pavement outside the luxury seaside apartment she worked in. Mirta Santana, who is Black, had just returned from walking her wealthy white employer's dog when she saw her 5-year-old on the ground. Miguel Otavio Santana da Silva had plunged 9 stories after being left alone in a lift by his mother's boss. He died soon after in the hospital. Miguel's death sparked national outrage, resulting in protests denouncing racism and police violence against Brazil's black youth. Demonstrators protested outside the building from which Miguel had fallen, lying face down on the floor to remember the position in which he was found. Santana said the rallies had given her strength. And those are your headlines in today's news. I'm Jacob Wentz from WSLR.
This is Akua Holt with COVID, Race, and Democracy. Thank you for being with us today. I have the associate editor of the historic Fort Times newspaper on the line with me today. Thank you, Jeffrey Boney, for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Akua. Always a pleasure.
You know, Jeffrey, there is a myth that the coronavirus isn't real, and you've had recently a personal experience with the coronavirus. Would you mind sharing your story with us?
Absolutely. I spent 9 days in the intensive care unit at United Memorial Medical Center here in Houston as a result of COVID-19. Initially, when I got sick on March 17th, I had no idea that I had COVID. I self-quarantined because that was kind of the buzzword of the day if you were feeling a little under the weather. But I only had a couple of symptoms. One was a loss of appetite, and the other was heavy diarrhea. But I had none of the other symptoms like the high fever or a heavy cough or shortness of breath. None of those things impacted me. Initially, I thought maybe I had some sort of stomach virus, or, you know, maybe there was a flu bug or something going around because, it was that season. But as the days progressed and I self-isolated in my house, I never moved from the couch except to go to the restroom for 8 days. On that eighth day is when I actually went to the doctor in order to get tested for COVID. Prior to that, I had called my primary care physician and I asked him, hey, you know, what could it be? And he said, well, you know, it sounds like a stomach virus or something of that effect. But he encouraged me not to go to the ER because there's no telling what I could possibly get by going to the ER in addition to what I was dealing with. So I stayed at home and I started getting progressively worse. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee found out I was ill. She called me up and she was the catalyst behind me actually even getting out of my house to go get tested. I got tested on the 25th. 2 days later, before I even got my results, I started coughing up blood and I called Dr. Verone, let him know what my status was. He encouraged me to get down to the ER right away. And while I was on my way there, he told me that I had tested positive for COVID-19. And so when I got there, they ran tests on me. They did a CT scan. They found that I had pneumonia in both my lungs. Heart rate was through the roof and my heart function had dropped to 30% and I was approaching heart failure. My liver and kidneys were impacted. I had a lot of issues that were going on top of the fact that I had COVID. So immediately they moved me to ICU from ER and I stayed in there for 9 days and was eventually released. Prior to my release, however, they did another CT scan. And they found that as a result of COVID-19, I was diagnosed with what's called a pulmonary embolism, which is a blood clot. I have a major blood clot in my right lung. That blood clot is dissolving, but it's still there.
Wow, Jeff, that is incredible. And you are still with us to tell the story.
Of course, it's one of those things that, you know, you still have that anxiety in your mind as to, could you get it again? I already know I had it. You just don't know what to expect. You know, you just try to be as careful as possible. I caught the virus at a time where it was just kicking off in the greater Houston area. There was no stay-at-home order. There was no mask order. And then you started hearing about the numerous people who were passing away across the world because of it. I had just gone to the rodeo for the cook-off. Nothing had shut down yet, but things start picking up extensively. And then it just spread like wildfire. And I don't know where I got it from. I kind of think that I got it in the grocery store, but I just don't know. For me, I had to spent all that time in ICU, but I'm fortunate because some people have passed away because of this vicious virus. I'm one of the fortunate and blessed ones. And so I'm just on a mission to be an advocate, to share with people that they need to mask up, they need to wash their hands, wear gloves if possible, stay at home if they can, try to avoid interaction with people as best as you can, especially large groups, and do social distancing if you do have to leave and go take care of some business outside of your home. So I strongly encourage everyone to please take this seriously because this is a serious, serious virus and it could be just as worse as the Spanish flu in 1918. Now we're starting to see an influx of cases because of the second wave that seemingly is coming forth. And then you have people in leadership capacities that are making unsound decisions that are putting us all at risk by, you know, trying to continue to have large events or sending our children back to school and, you know, reopening the state earlier than people had advocated for, and not listening to health professionals and local leaders and allowing the local leaders to protect their citizens. So we're in some real challenging and dangerous times, and we must take this virus seriously.
Well, thank you, Jeff Boney, for sharing your story. And I'm sure you've written a couple pieces about COVID-19 and your experience. So where can we stay in touch, and where can we read some of your articles?
So you can always check us out, forwardtimes.com. You'll find stories that I've written myself about my experience. And then, of course, there have been countless stories in content about COVID-19 that you can find at forwardtimes.com.
All right, Jeff. And in closing, do you have anything to say to the men out there with regard to this virus?
You know what I'm finding, because I'm also now the chairman of the board of a new organization called Cure COVID Consortium. And that is actually a culmination of some of the doctors in the community and two of the doctors that actually were responsible for my treatment and my recovery, Dr. Joseph Gath, well-known infectious disease doctor here in the greater Houston area and across the country, and Dr. Joseph Barone. Those two individuals helped to found this organization. And what we're finding is a lot of males, particularly African-American males, are negatively being impacted by this. And I think there's a lot of misconception that because you're young that you can't get coronavirus. And, you know, the average age at a couple of the sites in Houston, Texas, of individuals who tested positive for COVID-19 was 29 years of age. And you see that the lion's share of individuals who are actually being impacted by this are African Americans and Latinos. You know, men are afraid to go to the doctor sometimes. And so I strongly encourage our men to go to the doctor, get checked up, go get tested, please, even if you don't have symptoms, because you could be asymptomatic and not even know that you have COVID-19 and could be spreading it to others. Think about the fact that you have a grandparent potentially, or parents, or you have brothers and sisters or children or a spouse or a significant other or friends, coworkers, colleagues that you have to be around typically every day, every week, or sometimes, you know, regularly. So you need to be cognizant. Don't just do it for you. Do it for everyone else that you love and care about.
That was Jeffrey Boney, assistant editor of the Forward Times newspaper in Houston. You can visit them online at forwardtimes.com.
You are listening to COVID, Race, and Democracy, a daily show produced by Pacifica Radio and its affiliates around the country. Find out more about our work at our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org.
George Perry Floyd was born on October 14, 1973. He was killed on May 25, 2020 by Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Chauvin knelt on Floyd's neck for nearly 8 minutes and some seconds as he laid handcuffed on the ground, pleading for his life. After his death, protests against police violence erupted globally. Floyd's final words were recorded as, "Come on, man. Oh, I cannot breathe. Come on, man. Oh, they're going to kill me. They're going to kill me. I can't breathe." Lawrence O'Donnell reads George Floyd's exchange with his killers.
"We now know that George Floyd said, 'I can't breathe,' more than 20 times as he struggled for air under a police knee in the last minutes of his life. That new count of how many times he said, 'I can't breathe,' comes from the transcripts of the police body cameras of two of the police officers who were holding George Floyd down, Officer Thomas Lane and Officer Alexander King. These transcripts were made public in court filings today in Minneapolis. We do not have the transcript of the body cam of Officer Derek Chauvin, who kept his knee on George Floyd's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. That knee was on George Floyd's neck long after all of the witnesses present could tell that George Floyd had stopped breathing. The very first thing George Floyd says in the transcript of Officer Lane's body camera recording is, "Hey man, I'm sorry." The next thing George Floyd says is, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." George Floyd's language is always polite. The transcript is filled with George Floyd saying sorry and please. The police officer's language begins very aggressively with those lines that they all learned in cop movies. "Officer Lane, put your effing hands up right now. Keep your effing hands on the wheel." To which George Floyd says, "Yes, sir. I'm sorry, officer." George Floyd continues to apologize. "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. God dang, man. Man, I got shot the same way, Mr. Officer, before. I'm so sorry, Mr. Officer. Dang, man, last time I got shot like that, Mr. Officer, it was the same thing." It's not completely clear if George Floyd was saying he had once been shot by a police officer or if he possibly had been shot by someone else when he was approached while sitting in a car. George Floyd says, "Please don't shoot me, Mr. Officer. Please don't shoot me, man. Please, can you not shoot me, man? I'm sorry, Mr. Officer. I'll get on my knees, whatever." When Officer King says, "You're acting a little erratic," George Floyd says, "I'm scared, man." George Floyd says, "I'll do anything. I'll do anything. Y'all tell me anything y'all tell me to do. I'm not resisting, man. I'm not. I'm not. Mr. Officer, Mr. Officer, I'm not that kind of guy. Please, I'm not that kind of guy. Mr. Officer, please. I won't do nothing to hurt you, Mr. Officer." George Floyd was afraid of getting in the police car, and the transcript seems to reveal why. George Floyd, "Y'all, I'm going to die in here. I'm going to die, man. Officer King, you need to take a seat right now." George Floyd, "I just had COVID, man. I don't want to go back to that." George Floyd's autopsy showed that he had COVID-19 6 weeks before he was killed. He seemed to be afraid that going in a police car and being taken to a jail would give the coronavirus another chance to kill him. George Floyd says, "I'm not trying to win. I'll get on the ground, anything. I'm not a bad guy, man." Officer Lane says, "Get him on the ground." George Floyd says, "Let go of me, man. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Please, man, please listen to me. Please listen to me." Officer Tao, "Just lay him on the ground." George Floyd, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe." Officer Lane, "Jesus Christ." George Floyd, "I can't breathe." Officer Lane, "Thank you." George Floyd, "I can't breathe." Officer King, "Stop moving." George Floyd, "Mama, mama, mama, mama." Officer King, inaudible. George Floyd, "Mama, mama, mama. Mama, mama, mama." Officer Chauvin, "You're under arrest, guy." George Floyd, "All right, all right. Oh my God, I can't believe this. I can't believe this." Officer Chauvin, "So you're going to jail." Officer Lane, affirm. George Floyd, "I can't believe this, man. Mom, I love you. I love you." Officer Lane, inaudible. George Floyd, "Tell my kids I love them. I'm dead." George Floyd, "I can't breathe or nothing, man. This cold-blooded, man." He then screams. Officer Chauvin says, "You're doing a lot of talking, man." George Floyd, "Mama, I love you. I can't do nothing." Officer King, "EMS is on their way." George Floyd, "My face is gone. I can't breathe, man. Please, please let me stand. Please, man, I can't breathe." George Floyd, "My face is getting it bad." Officer Lane, "Here, should we get his legs up or is this good?" Officer Chauvin, "Leave him." Officer King, "Just leave him. Yep." Officer Chauvin, "Just leave him." George Floyd, "Please, man." Officer Tao, "Relax." George Floyd, "I can't breathe." Officer King, "You're fine. You're talking fine." Officer Lane, "You're talking. Deep breath." George Floyd, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I'll probably just die this way." Officer Tao, "Relax." George Floyd, "I can't breathe. My face. I can't breathe. Please. I can't breathe." George Floyd, "My stomach hurts. My neck hurts. Everything hurts. I need some water or something. Please, please. I can't breathe, officer." Officer Chauvin, "Then stop talking. Stop yelling." George Floyd, You're going to kill me, man. Officer Chauvin, then stop talking. Stop yelling. It takes a heck of a lot of oxygen to talk. George Floyd, come on, man. Oh, I cannot breathe. I cannot breathe. They'll kill me. They'll kill me. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Oh, and then George Floyd says, please, please, please. And he never spoke again. The last word that George Floyd said was please. As George Floyd remained motionless and apparently not breathing, spectators who had been yelling at the police officers for several minutes to stop what they were doing to George Floyd started to yell even more. And one spectator who could see how dangerous the police treatment of George Floyd was kept yelling at them to check George Floyd's pulse. He kept telling the police officers that George Floyd was not resisting and that he was no longer responsive. And with George Floyd motionless and silent for almost 2 minutes, that spectator then yelled at Officer Chauvin, who still had his knee on George Floyd's neck. And that spectator said, he's not even breathing right now, bro. You think that's cool. You think that's cool, right? Officer Chauvin then checked how the other police officers were doing. Officer Chauvin, you guys all right, though? Officer Lane, yeah. I mean, my knee might be a little scratched, but I'll survive.
You just heard from Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC reading an exchange between George Floyd and his killers.
Sometimes you just can't believe the things your eyes see. So much injustice in this life, and it's happening right on your TV screen. So you drop to your knees and you're praying, cause you can hear him saying he can't breathe. And it's all so overwhelming, because you know there's nothing you can do to help him. Continue to breathe, continue to breathe. In times like these, that's what your heart is for. Continue to breathe, continue to breathe. In honor of your brother, that's what your heart is for. There's always someone trying to take someone's power.
Protesters in LA blocked the downtown 101 freeway. 40 people were arrested during a protest in New York City. In Minneapolis, the National Guard moved in as a local police station burned. The anger is over a pattern of police brutality and centuries of inequality, turned into headlines yet again because of the death of one man.
But then we all learn.
George Floyd was 46 years old when police handcuffed and pinned him down after, according to officers, he physically resisted. A store clerk had called them in because he believed Floyd tried to buy something with a $20 bill that seemed counterfeit. Floyd was born in North Carolina and grew up in Houston's Third Ward. He became a star football player for his high school team. Former NBA star Steven Jackson, a childhood friend, posted tributes on Instagram calling Floyd his twin.
Twin, he was just a great dude, man. Somebody that supported me genuinely.
Floyd wasn't just a talented athlete. He was also a part of Houston's legendary hip-hop community. In the 90s, he recorded under the name Big Floyd and made cameos on multiple DJ Screw mixtapes. But friends say Floyd was never able to find real opportunities in Houston, and in 2007, police charged him with an armed robbery in connection with a home invasion. He ended up serving 5 years in prison. When he got out in 2014, he followed a friend to Minneapolis, where he found steady work as a truck driver and as a security guard at a restaurant with dance nights. His boss there said his employees loved him. But when the pandemic put the city on lockdown, his boss laid Floyd off, along with other staffers. Friends say Floyd was trying to get by, but was struggling like millions of Americans who have lost their jobs in the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. He leaves behind a six-year-old daughter in Houston and a brother in Texas, who told the media he sees his own brother's death as part of a horrifying pattern.
I'm tired of seeing black men die. Black lives matter too.
Murals and other memorials for Floyd are popping up around the world. And the protests continue.
We need to make noise. We need to make noise.
He said they don't make noise.
No. He said they need. No, he said they need to make noise.
They need to make noise. We have been quiet for a long time.
No justice! No justice! No justice! No justice! Say his name! Say his name! Say his name! Say his name!
The next thing you have to do is not march, but register and vote. We have to get out of office those people who feel like they have to energize and make possible the evil actions of those who would suppress black folks. We have a president right now who needs to be out of office. So right now, George Floyd has given to us a lot of pain and a lot of anguish because we lost one who we loved. But I hope that George Floyd has also energized us and has made us feel that we have to change this bad system. So, I'm up here just as many others are, and just as the Floyd family will be up here. I'm up here simply to say to you, keep mobilized. Don't let this be a one-day parade. Keep mobilized and get ready to vote. Vote. Vote.
God bless our elders. It's a shame that 93 years later, this man still has to come up here and fight for injustice. I pray to God that if I'm allowed to live 93 years of life on this earth, that this won't happen when I'm that age. I should be able to come back as a historian in 93 years and talk about what was, not what is.
Thanks to Indie Media and V for providing this narration and audio of the George Floyd tribute in Houston, Texas, where 60,000 people gathered downtown to hear from his family and close friends.
name. Say his name, won't you say his name?
In this next segment, Alice Walker speaks about democratic womanism.
Democratic womanism. You ask me why I smile when you tell me you intend in the coming national elections to hold your nose and vote for the lesser of two evils. There are more than two evils out there, is one reason I smile. Another is that our old buddy Nostradamus comes to mind with his fearful 400-year-old prophecy that our world and theirs too, our enemies, lots of kids included there, will end by nuclear Nakba or Holocaust in our lifetime. Which makes the idea of elections and the billions of dollars wasted on them somewhat fatuous. A southerner of color, my people held the vote very dear, while others, for centuries, merely appeared to play with it. One thing I can assure you of is this. I will never betray such pure hearts by voting for evil, even if it were microscopic, which, as you can see in any newscast, no matter the slant, it is not. I want something else, a different system entirely. One not seen on this earth for thousands of years, if ever. Democratic womanism. Notice how this word has man right in the middle of it. That's one reason I like it. He is right there, front and center, but he is surrounded. I want to vote and work for a way of life that honors the feminine. A way that acknowledges the theft of the wisdom female and dark mother leadership might have provided our spaceship all along. I am not thinking of a talking head kind of gal, happy to be mixing it up with the baddest bad boys on the planet. Her eyes a slit, her mouth a zipper. No, I am speaking of true regime change. Where women rise to take their place en masse at the helm of Earth's frail and failing ship, where each thousand years of our silence is examined with regret, and the cruel manner in which our values of compassion and kindness have been ridiculed and suppressed, brought to bear on the disaster of the present time. The past must be examined closely, I believe, before we can leave it there. I am thinking of democratic and perhaps socialist womanism. For who else knows so deeply how to share but mothers and grandmothers, big sisters and aunts, to love and adore both female and male, not to mention those in between. To work at keeping the entire community fed, educated, and safe. Democratic womanism, democratic socialist womanism, would have as its icons such fierce warriors for good as Vandana Shiva, Aung San Suu Kyi, Wangari Maathai, Harriet Tubman, Yoko Ono, Frida Kahlo, Angela Davis, and Barbara Lee. With new ones always rising wherever you look. You are also on this list, but it is so long, ISIS would appear midway, that I must stop or be unable to finish the poem. So just know I've stood you in a circle that includes Marion Wright Edelman, Amy Goodman, Sojourner Truth, Gloria Steinem, and Mary McLeod Bethune, John Brown, Frederick Douglass, John Lennon, and Howard Zinn are there, happy to be surrounded. There is no system now in place that can change the disastrous course the earth is on. Who can doubt this? The male leaders of earth appear to have abandoned their very senses, though most appear to live now entirely in their heads. They murder humans and other animals, forests and rivers and mountains, every day they are in office, and never seem to notice it. They eat and drink devastation. Women of the world, is this devastation us? Would we kill whole continents for oil or anything else, rather than limit the number of consumer offspring we produce and learn how to make our own fire? Democratic womanism, democratic socialist womanism, a system of governance we can dream and imagine and build together, one that recognizes at least 6,000 years of brutally enforced complicity in the assassination of Mother Earth, but foresees 6,000 years ahead of us when we will not submit. What will we need? 100 years at least to plan. 500 will be handed us gladly when the planet is scared enough. In which circles of women meet, organize ourselves, and allied with men brave enough to stand with women. Men brave enough to stand with women, nurture our planet to a degree of health. And without apology, impossible to make a bigger mess than has been made already, devote ourselves, heedless of opposition, to tirelessly serving and resuscitating our mothership, and with gratitude for her care of us, worshipfully commit to rehabilitating it.
Thanks to Democracy Now! For this clip. Alice Walker is a novelist, short story writer, poet, and social activist. In 1982, she wrote the novel The Color Purple, for which she won the National Book Award for Hardcover Fiction and the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction.
Indigenous people, shine your light, we are equal. I remember the days when our prayers were illegal. I remember the days when being Indian was lethal. Yeah, we had a rough past, but get ready for the sequel. Get ready for the glorious comeback of our people. Oh, yeah. Rise up, all you warriors of love, all you answers to the prayers of our ancestors from above. I can feel it in my heart. Can you feel it in your blood? I can hear the seventh fire calling us to wake up. All nations rise up, 'cause now's your time. We don't have to hide anymore, 'cause now's the time. All nations rise up, 'cause now's your time. We don't have to hide anymore, 'cause now's the time. With forgiveness as my bow and my prayers as my arrows, pull them back and let go. I watch them fly like sparrows, have hope. Yeah, have hope
with compassion
as my shield and faith down to my marrow. I will walk the pollen path even when it gets narrow. Yeah, yeah, I resurrect. Yes, you can bet that we seen the single mama raising children on the res. We seen domestic violence tear apart what we have left. We seen the alcohol take it all and leave us dead. We seen the children take their lives when they can't take the dread anymore.
It's a war.
Can't take the dread anymore.
It's a war.
No, we can't take the dread anymore.
It's a war.
No, we can't take the dread anymore.
It's a war.
Yeah. It's a war, but we seen it all before. And now we know we can change it, cause that's why we were born. We know we are the ones that we have been waiting for. We are the ones Grandma has been praying for.
So rise up,
all you warriors of love. All you answers to the prayers of our ancestors from above. I can feel it in my heart. Can you feel it in your blood? I can hear the seventh fire calling us to wake up.
Wake up.
Pueblo hermoso, levántense, es nuestro tiempo. No tienes que esconderte más. Ahora es nuestro tiempo.
Mujer indígena, tú eres tan sagrada. Traigas medicina de tu suelo todavía. A pesar del abuso de tu cuerpo y tu tierra, respetamos tus ancestros y la suya cultura.
Liana Lopez files this report regarding the recent Supreme Court ruling impacting the Native Americans' long struggle against the Keystone Pipeline.
Thousands of environmental justice advocates and water protectors are celebrating the unexpected and unprecedented back-to-back shutdown of four major extractive energy projects in the United States, all within 3 days of each other. The Atlantic Coast Natural Gas Pipeline, which was to have run through West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina, the Dos Repúblicas coal mine on the southern Texas border in Eagle Pass, the Keystone XL Pipeline for the fifth time, and the Dakota Access Pipeline, which gained media attention for the militarized response to demonstrators on behalf of Energy Transfer Partners, a firm in which Donald Trump has close financial ties, were all canceled or ordered to be closed this week. Candy White, an organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network, a group working to address the effects of climate change and environmental justice in Indigenous communities across North America, talks about the 7 months she spent as a water protector at the Standing Rock encampments beginning in the fall of 2016.
And so in my head at the language, I said, hello, relatives. My name is Eagle Woman. My English name is Candy White, and I am Mandan Hidatsa Arikara from Newtown, North Dakota, originally, but have been living out in Montana for a few years now, close to the Red Lodge area where the mountains are. Fort Berthold, where I'm from, up in Newtown, in a smack dab in the center of the oil patch for the Dakota Access Pipeline. So we've been dealing with fracking since about 2006 and dealing with health disparities and issues in our reservation community as a result of that fracking. We were actually doing our second annual water blessing and healing walk at Fort Berthold when, you know, everything started really kicking off in August of 2016 at Standing Rock. It was actually the youth that started bringing attention in the first place. We had been organizing with the One Mind Youth Movement, and then there was the International Indigenous Youth Council. And of course, IEN, the Indigenous Environmental Network, we were helping the youth fundraise, but it was all very much behind the scenes and just trying to help out. We weren't, I wouldn't say, front and center. And of course, LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, who lived right there on Cannonball, right on the land, and she had opened up her land and her area for people to come and stand with her, never knowing that it was going to be this big, that it was going to get this crazy. And so right after our water blessing and healing walk, I took off to Standing Rock, and I was there in camp from August to February, when of course everybody was forcibly removed by our own military, which was a very surreal moment as well. I was horrified. Geez, I'm getting emotional right now thinking back on it. It was just, it was like nothing I thought we would ever experience before. Because my grandpa was a World War II vet, you know, he fought for this country, and a lot of my uncles did as well. And it's like, it was crazy to see our military with their big guns and their tanks, like, doing this to us. Because, you know, supposedly we're citizens of this country as well. But it was a knife twisting in my heart watching all of that happen. And it was just kind of a powerless moment, you know. But then flash forward to a few days ago, and I woke up in the morning, and I was like, wait, is this fake news? Is this real? Wait, no. Because we knew the judge was going to make a decision about the EIS, the environmental impact statement. But even if he did rule in our favor, we were convinced that there was no way that this pipeline would get shut down. And to see that he ruled that not only did it have to be shut down, it also had to be emptied out by August 5th. I jumped up and down, and I was running around, and I scared my son, who I know. My husband was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, didn't you hear the news? Because he's usually on the social media stuff before I am, or the news stuff. And he was like, what? No way. They're shutting it down. And I was like, yes. And I felt so vindicated. I felt like we did this because we had every right to do this. We were within the bounds of the law. It was Energy Transfer Partners that was outside of the law, and they were being protected, breaking the law. And it may have taken 4 years, you know, for it to be righted, but it was still a moment in time to celebrate. This victory with the Dakota Access Pipeline having to be shut down and a full environmental impact statement and having to be empty just proves that protest accomplishes everything. I mean, obviously and clearly, even the political figure that was like, you know, you asked the question, do you think this was as a result of the protesters? He said, oh, yes, it was absolutely their fault. And I was like, yes! I was jumping up and down because that is how things get done. And it is not a bad thing. This thing is not a bad thing. This is in the protection of all people, all waters, and the significance and the importance of it cannot be overlooked. And it wasn't just the Dakota Access Pipeline this week. It was, you know, the Keystone XL had a ruling to say. We're like, what? Wait, now what? It was like the next day, and I was jumping up and down all over again. The Atlantic Coast Natural Gas Pipeline got totally scrapped. And it was as a result of people standing up and saying no. And that's what it's supposed to be about in this country anyways, isn't it? Supposedly, democracy and freedom and the ability to choose. And, you know, as a Native American, as a Mandan, Hidatsa, Arikara woman growing up in this country, it has been hard to even fathom that anybody would ever listen to the things that we say are accurate, because this country has been so horrific towards us. And this feels like a huge win, not only for the country and for people who get out, you know, and like myself and say something, but also for Native people in general, you know. And it feels huge, and it feels like a step in the right direction in the protection of our next 7 generations. And that's really what it's all about. There's still hurdles to cross. And it's like, I don't care. I'm celebrating now. I'm celebrating Atlantic Coast, because sometimes these victories are short-lived. And there hasn't been many. We've been fighting against so many things, like at Yucca Mountain with IEN fighting against the nuclear depository. It took 14 years and to win that case. And they're right back at it, looking at depositing nuclear waste there again. It's maddening. And I hope that this now is like a forward momentum roller coaster that doesn't stop now, because we have to make that change. We're running out of time.
That was Candy White, a mother from North Dakota and an organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. Tuesday, an emergency order to delay the Dakota Access Pipeline shutdown was denied by a federal judge. As of Thursday, Energy Transfer Partners was still defying the court order and reported to media outlets that it had no immediate plans to shut down. This is Liana Lopez reporting from Houston for COVID, Race, and Democracy.
Up next,
Patricia Jones, certified nurse, midwife, and host of Whole Mother, shares the challenges involved dealing with women who are pregnant and the outbreak of the COVID pandemic.
Well, I am wearing a mask wherever I go, anywhere except at home. I'm insisting on my husband wearing a mask too, because I don't want him to bring it home to me. I'm washing my hands more than I've ever done before. I'm wearing gloves most of the time. It's hard wearing a mask all the time.
Yes.
But I'm doing it, and I'm working really hard to keep myself healthy so that I can go to births.
What happens at the birth? When you're with a woman in labor and she's giving birth?
We are all wearing masks except for the woman in labor. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to have masks for everyone. We're asking for the families that are having babies, especially the pregnant mom, to stay home as much as she possibly can the 2 weeks before her due date so that she doesn't take a chance on getting sick. We don't want anything to ruin our plans.
Very good.
So we're doing okay. We haven't had anyone so far that's had COVID.
Very good. Debbie?
That we know of.
How is it for you going into a hospital and out of hospital birth?
So my primary thing in the past few months has been fielding quite panicked phone calls from women who are planning hospital births. The majority of my clients are planning hospital births, not all of them, but most of them. And the way it's working at hospitals in Houston now is that if you test positive, they take your baby from you and put the baby in the NICU for 14 days without visitors. And that's quite distressing, which is why Jackie and all the other midwives are seeing such a jump in their practice, people coming to them, because the thought of being separated from your baby, especially when it's not evidence-based. It's not what the CDC is recommending. It's not what the World Health Organization is recommending. But, you know, healthy babies are being separated from having to test positive. And that's been, it's quite distressing.
Yes.
There was one hospital that was letting doulas in, but they closed that window on Friday. So no more doulas at the only hospital in the greater Houston area that was permitting doulas. So my labor support now looks like doing extra sessions with couples before their baby comes, training, like a crash course for partners.
Patricia Jones, certified nurse, midwife, and host of Whole Mother.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me.
Today's playlist featured India Irie, Prince, What You Talking About, Lila June, and Nina Simone. This concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and its radio affiliates that contributed to the production of this show. Special thanks to the Pacifica Radio's National COVID Task Force, to our consultant, Verna Avery Brown, and to you for being such a wonderful audience. I'm Akua Holt, your host and co-executive producer, along with Steve Zeltzer and Paulina Vasiliev. Thanks for listening, and make sure to follow us online at covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Harriet Tubman once said, "Don't ever stop. Keep going. If you want a taste of freedom, keep going."